today with us, we have two individuals who are doing very interesting work up the coast. We have Scott Planting and Sharon Daly. Scott has been the president of the Maine Seacoast Mission since 2010. During that time, his key accomplishments have included expanding EDGE, the mission's academic and enrichment program serving over 700 Downeast children, establishing a comprehensive family development program to support low-income Washington County families, and organizing a college support program for nearly 100 mission scholarship recipients. Prior to the mission, Scott was the minister for a three-church parish in West Central Maine for 35 years, overseeing a multi-person staff and coordinating a larger parish composed of churches and outreach ministries. Thanks for coming in today, Scott.
Thank you for having me.
And you brought with you Sharon Daly, who grew up on a farm in Missouri, and after attending nursing school in St. Louis, moved east. She has worked at many various nursing jobs and loved them all. They include pediatrics at Mass General and Boston Children's, home health in Boston and rural Maine, rehab nursing, a doctor's office, hyperbaric chamber, and hospice nursing. Before joining the Maine Seacoast Mission to start the telemedicine and island health program 15 years ago, she lives on Islesboro, Maine, and is married with two grown daughters and one grandchild. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for asking us.
I love the fact that you both have a Midwest connection. You both have a St. Louis connection. That doesn't always happen that we have even one person from St. Louis in the studio, never mind two. But you didn't know each other when you were both there at the same time.
No.
I was in nursing school. And
I was in high school growing up.
And Scott, you're originally from Long Beach,
California.
So somehow you've kind of worked your way gradually east.
Yeah, our family, my dad, post-World War II, moving around, trying to find work, careers, and it was a time when families, where people were on the move a lot.
And your family, Sharon, wasn't so much on the move. It sounds like you were pretty settled.
No, they're still where they were. I came to Boston Children's to work and planned on going west and met my husband the first night I was in Boston.
So somehow here I am. It was meant to be.
It was.
I'm interested in the Maine Seacoast Mission because it's been around a long time and it is really needed to evolve. I think 1905 was when it was founded.
Yes, we're 111 years old. And what's really interesting, Lisa, is we do basically the same kind of work we did when we began. Two brothers on Mount Desert Island founded the mission, two ministers. And their primary concern was people living on islands, lighthouses, and in 1905 it was pretty rugged. There were no schools, health facilities, no services at all. So the two brothers, this was sort of a period of exploration and doing kind of big things. They bought a 20-foot sloop, the Hope, and started sailing out to islands and providing, you know, very basic kinds of services, providing health care. Sharon, her work as a nurse is what we've always done. We've always had nurses going out to islands. And it's interesting, the islands go west to Monhegan, but we've also included down east Maine, Washington County, the peninsulas that go down. In those years were also island, pretty remote community. So we have covered basically the same footprint from down east Maine to mid-coast for 110 years, doing basically the same thing, obviously modernized with telemedicine and sort of state-of-the-art technology, but the same very close connection to people, families, communities. That hasn't changed at all. In my 6 years with the mission, the one thing I've learned is the one thing we have is trust. That's the only thing we have. To offer is trust, and that's been built up over a long time. So it's very powerful to go to an island or a down east community and talk to people whose parents and grandparents and great grandparents had a connection with the mission. So
Sharon, when you were growing up in Missouri and going to nursing school and really doing a broad variety of things, did you ever think that you might be doing telemedicine on the Sunbeam?
No, it certainly wasn't my life plan. But I do think growing up on a farm in the area that I did was very similar to island living, because farmers and fishermen, you know, one's working on the lands, one's working on the water, but the lifestyle's really similar. And it was a very rural, isolated community. So I do see a lot of similarities, and I think it's helped me in my job.
The Seacoast Mission is known for, I believe this is the seventh boat that's started with.
Fifth.
This is the fifth boat, okay. So starting with the Hope back in the beginning of the last century, and now you're on the Sunbeam. You've become known for helping people with their health care, but you also have done a lot with education. You've done a lot with sort of basic human needs. Talk to me a little bit about that, Scott.
What I'm proud about is we respond to needs and concerns as we see them. We often don't initiate things, but we respond. You know, the whole impetus for telemedicine is you have people, you know, fishermen living out on Matinicus, 30 miles out to sea, and to get to see a doctor or healthcare just means a lot of travel and days off of work. So we, working with them, provided this sort of state-of-the-art technology. So everything we do kind of is in response to people. Our work in Washington County with children is, again, schools were able to offer so much, and there was a real concern for kind of the enrichment activities that our after-school program EDGE does. So, again, we were embraced. We just didn't move into Washington County and say, well, we're going to provide these things for you. It was, again, this long century of knowing people, knowing concerns, knowing people's strengths, and responding to them. So that's how we have always grown. It's if you know Sharon is a listener, and what I love about our staff, people are listeners, and they take a lot of time. We don't move into things quickly. We take a lot of time to ask questions, to kind of, you know, what do you think about this? Does this seem right? So we have a very deliberative style of working.
Sharon, as a nurse, you have a pretty kind of solid understanding that everything that people engage in their lives could possibly have an impact in their health. So it's not just they have a lung infection. It's what they do for work. It's how they socialize with other people. I mean, there's really so many elements to a person's health. That must be an interesting place for you, because you're not just, here, let me put a Band-Aid on it. You're, let's find some foundational solution to what's going on.
I guess it's what one of the things I really love about my job is, you know, if you're in a doctor's office and you hand somebody a prescription, they go home, you don't know if they've gotten that prescription filled or if they have the money to get that prescription filled. I think my hospice work before this is a lot of what I do now, because it's looking at the whole person. And on this job, not only is it the whole person, it's the whole community. So we're very involved in the communities. The crew of the boat is very involved in the communities without being enmeshed, which allows us to come, be sounding boards, maybe offer some suggestions and help, but then we leave. So we're like the safe people. We're the safe part of the community. And I love that, being able to know the patient, their uncle, their aunt, their grandparents, their pets, and just the whole thing.
Yeah, that lends a lot of important perspective, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a family doctor, I get to hear what one person tells me, unless they bring their children or their grandparents with them, but I get to hear what one person tells me about their health and their perspective on their health. So for you to be able to say, oh, well, I've met your brother, or I've met your mm-hmm. friend, and, you know, I have the sense that you're part of this greater fabric,
right.
That must be very useful.
And getting to know people over this length of time. And one thing, you know, I've watched is you see that person that maybe said, oh, I'm pre-diabetic, I'm going to do something about it. And you see the people that have done something and the changes that's brought forth, and then, unfortunately, the people that haven't. So it's been new for me to really watch the progression of people's health.
One of my favorite images from the Sunbeam is when we dock. Sharon and Douglas Kornman, who is the director of outreach, and he's a counselor and provides pastoral care. The two of them leave the boat with beanbags full of whatever it is they need. Sharon will bring medical things, Douglas or food.
Or puzzles.
And they go two by two. And they will visit, over the course of a few hours, literally every family on the island. making house calls. And that's how they know what's going on these communities. And you do that, you know, time after time after time. It builds up almost a soil, a richness in understanding what's going on in the life of the community.
I always say I do house calls and truck calls, because when you're walking, that's when people, you know, the lobstermen stop with their trucks and pull over and just talk. And, you know, you don't get that if you don't go off the boat.
The Sunbeam goes out, from what I understand, a couple times a month for maybe three, four days at a time.
Yeah, our normal schedule for telemedicine is pretty much every other week, and we leave on Tuesday morning from Northeast Harbor around 8, and we go Frenchboro, Idaho, Matinicus. Not always in that order, because at Matinicus, we can only get in at high tide, so we have to plan all of our visits around the tide. We usually spend a night on Idaho and one on Matinicus, and then we get in sometime Thursday. Last Thursday, I think we got in around 10 o'clock because we had a potluck dinner and an event on Frenchboro, so we came in late.
And then on the alternate week, we have a lot of special events. The kiddos who live on these islands, the schools are K-8, and they go to high school on the mainland. So we will have a middle school retreat, or several during the course of the year, to get all the middle schoolers from all the islands and take them to the mainland and kind of introduce them to, this is what school's going to be like. It's going to be really different than a class of three. So we do lots of kind of events. Sometimes we use the boat as a taxi cab. We had a photographer, an artist out on Frenchboro, who lights up objects at night with flashlights. And so literally the entire Frenchboro community gathered at a dock with flashlights in the dark, in the cold. And we lit up, and it was just, then we all went over to the school for a reception. So we do lots of those fun things. We bring a steel drum band out. We're bringing a jazz band out from a high school.
And next week is one of the providers I work with, Dr. Deal Schneider, and he's doing a talk on the islands on communication, personal and community communication, which on an island can be difficult. So we do educational things and fun things.
How has technology enabled you to shift or improve the way that you're able to offer both healthcare but also educational outreach?
For the healthcare part, it has enabled people to see a primary care physician with specialized equipment. So it's the best of both worlds. It's high, you know, the best of technology, and then me is a personal touch, and the boat is a personal touch. So it's the primary care, but it also allows them to have counseling. We do a lot of counseling for depression, marriage counseling, drug and alcohol, and that's been a really big use of it. So that's opened up something. And then we do things like smoking cessation classes, educational things for the kids, talks on Lyme disease. So as Scott said earlier, we really try to listen to where people's interests are and then provide what it is that they would like.
So for people who aren't familiar with telemedicine, what does telemedicine mean?
The simplified version of it, and I don't ever get too complex with the IT part of it, is there's a room on the boat with a flat screen TV on the wall. People come in to see the provider, and I do just what an office nurse would do. I would take the vital signs, take the history, do that provider's paperwork, fax it to the provider. Then I'm able to call the provider there. It's like fancy Skyping, only it's very HIPAA compliant and all of that. So the provider's on the TV, and all of our interaction is live. And the easiest example is if the person has a sore throat, earache, and a cough. After the provider talks to the patient, they might say to me, we would like to see how their throat looks. So I have something called a Gen camera, so I'm able to show them the person's throat and actually freeze the image. So in some ways it's better than being in the office, because it's magnified and he can look at it as long as they want. Then if they have an earache, I have an otoscope, so I'm able to show them the inner ear, and I have a stethoscope, so if they want to listen to heart and lung sounds. And then after the visit, if the provider said, well, you know, I wonder if they might have strep throat, I can do a quick strep screen. They wanted some lab work, I can draw some labs and store those until we get back into the mainland to do to take it to the hospital for testing. And then getting medication to the islands, I always say the way I get them there is depends on what day of the week it is, what island it is, and what the weather is. But people on islands know how to figure things out, so we work that out. It's usually they can get it that day or the next day.
The telemedicine system is part of a regional system called the New England Telemedicine Consortium. And that consortium links about 320 sites, hospitals, all kinds of healthcare facilities, a boat, together with very high-speed internet that is, again, HIPAA protected. So we also have a bridge system, so we can basically connect to anybody in the world. And we occasionally do that with specialists, and that's sort of the growing side of that. So we could connect with you in your office. So it's a large, very well-functioning system. Last week, I was at a New England Rural Health Network meeting, and Wendy Wolf, who was really one of the stars in health in Maine, she gave us a really nice shout-out. And I think what delivery of healthcare in rural areas is so complicated, just, you know, docs and providers, especially places where we live, are very few. So having this system really provides much more accessibility for people. And what the key to it is not just saying, here, sit in front of a television screen and talk to a doctor, but you sit in front of a television screen and you talk to Sharon. And having a real live human being who can kind of introduce you and say, this is okay, this is not weird, it's safe, you'll be fine. And you see Sharon, the doctors that we connect with, and again, this is not for everybody, but we deal with some great docs who work on the other end, and they're fabulous people. Sharon works really hard to try to get them out to the islands at least annually, so the person you see on the TV screen, you can actually meet in real life, and that helps. So the technology is really important, but also the human side of having Sharon to say, it's okay. Or show
why
up.
Why aren't you at your appointment? I know where you live.
Yeah, that's actually a really strong statement, yeah, that mm-hmm. you could actually bring the boat in and you can actually walk to their house and say, hey, what's going on with you?
And I do.
And she does. And I've seen this many times. And, you know, fishermen are, you know, these are big, strong, very active men for the most part. Some women, but mostly guys. And Sharon is so good to going up to them and saying, I need to check your blood pressure right now. And they say, yes, ma'am. We all say yes, ma'am, to Sharon. And she really has that, and that's very unusual with these communities to have that kind of entrance into everybody's lives. So when Sharon tells us all to do something, we do it. So really important.
But
in a nice way.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's a real honor to be able to be part of people's lives on the islands or anywhere, but, you know.
Well, you're describing something that is really why many of us went into medicine in the first place. I'm sure it has something to do why you went into medicine, and that really is that connection with people mm-hmm. and their families and their communities. And it's interesting that the way medicine seems to have been going for a while is away from that touch and that connection, and that we're able to do a lot of very high-tech stuff, but we somehow that relationship piece has been, I guess the importance of it has been downplayed somewhat.
Or all of the paperwork and forms and all of that and rules and regulations have gotten in the way of it, and that's one wonderful thing about my job is there's not a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of coordination, but there's not a lot of paperwork. And when I had left my last job, one form at admission was 36 pages. So this was a great change for me.
And your last job?
Was doing hospice.
And that's a little ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, But so this the is Medicare the, form was 36 pages. That was one admission form.
So at the end of somebody's life, when you are bringing them to a place where they are getting ready to die, you actually have to fill out a 36-page form. Mm-hmm. That seems weird to me. But I guess that's why you're doing this now.
Yep.
Well, and not to say anything bad about Medicare or hospice, because I think it's very complicated and there's a lot of reasons why things are the way that they are. But it really does, it does my heart good, and it makes me feel a little wistful, honestly, that, that you have the kind of access that you do, and Scott, that you have the ability to work within this very collaborative community. And it reminds me a little bit of LifeLight, although the work that they do is more acute, but that they are reaching out into the communities that need higher level and emergent care. But they're not waiting for people to come to them. They're going to those people.
It's interesting. The Sunbeam years ago was LifeLight. And we were the one who transported people from islands. And now our boat goes 9 or 10 knots with the wind pushing us. We are really a slow boat. And what lobster boats go at least twice that.
Oh, more.
So it's interesting. Islanders have this sort of uncanny sense when they need, they know when they need to get to the mainland if there's an emergency. And LifeLight provides a lot of that. But they also know whose boats are available to get them to the mainland at 18 knots. So but they do have an uncanny sense that they've learned that. You don't wait for things. You got to move.
Yeah. And the one time I had an emergency on the island, LifeLight couldn't come. And that's what we said was, what's the fastest way to get this person off this island? And so they knew right away whose boat was fastest, and that's what we did.
Well, it speaks to an interesting self-reliance and an interesting, I think, lack of willingness to give up one's own knowledge of surroundings, of boat speeds, of health. And I think that that's the, you know, this great independence that you're describing can actually be, maybe it's not so good if they don't want to come in and get their blood pressure checked, but it can also be really an asset because they're willing to really take responsibility for what needs to happen in some cases.
You know, and I've lived in rural Maine for 40 years now, and I saw that in the early 70s, communities had a lot of that kind of self-reliance, interdependence, because they had to. This is in Western Maine and now on the coast. And, you know, people had, you know, your jobs, families, they could make a living. There was a quality of life. And sadly, over a long, long time now in Maine, a lot of these small towns have lost a lot of that. Jobs have gone away. And you're probably right. Island communities are probably the last sort of holdout, just because of the way they are and the way the fishing works, of that kind of resilience and self-sufficiency. It's a good point.
And they pull together really well in bad times, better than good times sometimes.
This, what you do is all part of the Maine Seacoast Mission, and you were founded in 1905. With this idea of spiritual, I don't know, guidance perhaps, but mm-hmm. certainly the idea of a mission. There was a spiritual aspect to it. There's still a spiritual aspect to it, but that does not interfere with the ability to offer care to anybody, regardless of their spiritual inclination.
Absolutely, and our definition of spirituality is what we've been talking about, is wellness, in that whole cluster of words that includes health and wholeness and heal. That's how we work, that entirety, that clusters. And so for us, health is both, you know, a singularity in your person, but also the well-being of the community that you're part of. And we have a strong sense you don't have those apart. You have to be well in yourself, but also that the community itself around you, and that includes the natural world. All aspects have to sort of work together. So our sense of spirituality is very inclusive that way.
And I think, you know, everybody that I work with on the boat, I feel like we're never judgmental. We're very non-judgmental and accepting of wherever that person is and whatever their beliefs are.
How many people does it take to run the Sunbeam?
There's five. There's a captain, an engineer, a steward who does all of the cooking and greeting and welcoming, and Douglas Corman, who's our spiritual person, and he's also has a background in counseling.
And how many people does the Maine Seacoast Mission in total employ?
We have about 30 full-time people, and with EDGE, the after-school program, we employ a lot of teachers on a part-time, and there's about 80 teachers we employ on a part-time basis, so a little over 100.
And a lot of volunteers.
I'm sure that people who are listening will be interested in learning more about the Maine Seacoast Mission and about the Sunbeam. Do you have a website they might go to?
We do. Seacoast Mission, www.seacoastmission.org. So, please.
And I've had the good fortune, I think, twice now to go on board the Sunbeam, because it seems as if when you're not out with the islands, you actually do some docking at various places and letting people tour. So
sure.
That's a nice opportunity for
sure.
People as well. We've been speaking with Scott Planting and with Sharon Daly, who both are with the Maine Seacoast Mission. Scott is the president and Sharon is the head of the telemedicine program. Thanks so much for coming in and talking
with
us today.
Very enjoyable. Thank you.